It is 3:04 in the Fast Lane. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Chris Ronji is back. Brad Thompson, Randy Carricker. That was Robert Flores of MLB Network with Bernie and Michelle yesterday here on 101 ESPN. And he's so kind, saying that these teams are pretty
good. We'll take
good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, we would, rather than mediocre.
Thank you, Roflo.
Yeah, hey,
Let's not go back and listen to all of the recordings of us talking about how great the National League Central was going to be this year.
Yeah, right.
Well, they don't exist, so don't go looking for it.
Well, let's just go with this. It's highly competitive.
We were right
we
about
know that.
That.
Because the difference between first place and last place is 6.5 games.
Yep. In
so
June.
Interesting.
Milwaukee 13-13, the Cardinals 13-13, the Cubs 14-15, the Reds 11-13, and the Pirates were 11-15. The Cardinals are 24th in MLB in team OPS. The Cubs and Brewers are 8th and 9th. Cardinals have scored 48 fewer runs than the Brewers, 65 fewer than the Cubs. But in the most important statistic, the standings, the Cardinals are right there.
Yeah,
2.5 back and 3.5 back.
We'll take it at this point when this team. I hope, and April, obviously I do remember April, but I'm hoping that they haven't played their best baseball or most consistent baseball. But right now, we'll take the Roflo's compliment of they're good. They're a good team. We all know what the problem has been for the Cardinals here recently, outside of a couple of pitching performances that went awry. I know Jack Flaherty last time out was a tough one. He'll get a chance again today, which, by the way, I don't know if we were talking about it before the show, but I didn't know how close he was with Tyler Skaggs, so yeah. I'm sure it's going to be an emotional night for him. He had a tweet about it with pictures with Tyler, who passed away yesterday, member of the Angels. So I'm sure an emotional night for him. Dakota Hudson had a rocky one the other day, but the issue has been the offense, and it's been really bad for the Cardinals. Since May 1st, so 2 months now, the Cardinals have a 667 OPS. That is good for 29th in the major leagues. Only the Detroit Tigers are worse in 2 months. Now, I don't think that's a small sample size, right?
Yeah. That's pretty good size. Yeah.
This is in June. Well, actually, let's start with May. In May, Major League Baseball set a record as far as home runs go. In June, they shattered that record. The Cardinals right now, 57 home runs. That's 26th in baseball in those 2 months. So they haven't been hitting the home run, and they're not getting on base. The on-base percentage of 302 is 28th. I mean, this offense is the reason this team has been bad.
And in addition to that, they are striking out more than anybody in the National League at a higher rate than any other teams in the National League, with the exception of the Marlins. The Marlins are a 24.6 strikeout rate. The Rockies and Cardinals and the Reds are 24.1. So, I mean, you're talking about three teams that are really close.
Well, and you combine that with no hard contact. Oftentimes, that's something that you'll give up. It's like, okay, we're swinging and missing and we're striking out a lot, but we're also hitting bombs left and right, and we're hitting doubles all the time. You're not getting that.
No, and one of the, you can look at individuals, too, in this case. One of them being Matt Carpenter, a guy who last year had some struggles early on. In fact, some pretty big struggles for the first couple of months of the season before he turned it on. And I know we've talked about this already here in the last couple of weeks. There were still, at the time, indications that he was getting close, that eventually those hits were going to start to come for him because he was hitting the baseball hard. He's not doing that right now. Paul Goldschmidt is. Maybe there's a little bit of bad luck with him at the moment. But of those two guys who were supposed to be a significant part of this offense, run producers, even though, you know, Carpenter is a leadoff guy, and so that kind of limits the amount of times he's going to be able to drive in runs, he's still supposed to be a big part of this Cardinals offense. Of those two guys, I still have a lot of concern that both of them are going to rebound. I will take Goldschmidt just because of the track record. Mm-hmm. Unless he's injured, unless there's something that's bothering him, I'm concerned that's I would think he's going to be okay. But if something is bothering him, then he's probably not going to rebound. I think the issue here is, with the hitters they have, what they're doing, and more importantly, what they're not doing, are we confident they're all going to rebound when the Cardinals need them to do so?
I'm not.
I am confident in him as long as he's healthy. And I'm confident in what Marcell Ozuna has been doing. But for everybody else, I don't really know what to expect this year.
And here's another thing. If you just take away the standings at the moment, and you look at the fact that the Cubs are third in the league in ERA, they're fifth in the league in runs, they have the second highest run differential. Granted, they've made a lot of errors, but they've always made a lot of errors under Joe Maddon. The Cubs look to me like the team that could go on a run. Now, Hamels being hurt doesn't help them, but getting Kimbrel does help them, and they'll probably get Hamels back at some point. Everything except for the record for Chicago would lead you to believe that they're a team that's still going to go on a run and win a bunch of games.
See, and that's where I am. I am grateful at the moment the Cardinals are not out of this thing, that they are not playing in a different division where the lead team is just totally running away with this thing and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to catch up. I am grateful for that, and I am hopeful as a fan that things start to pick up for them. But my confidence level is not high. Like I watch them play, and I know people are going to bring up the Blues and continue to bring up that example from earlier in the year and how bad they looked at the beginning of the season, and then look what happened.
Watch the pregame show tonight.
I don't have that feeling for this Cardinals team. Maybe they do it, and I'm hopeful they do it, but my confidence level is not there.
Well, I agree with, I think it would be amazing if, in fact, that happened, but you have to trust your eyes. Just like you trust your eyes when the Blues were doing their thing. They weren't playing up to where they should.
They also made some big-time changes.
They did, certainly, and they had somebody come save them, a goalie come save them. Because mm-hmm. If you make a coaching change and keep your same goalie, you don't
It needed both things to happen.
But I do agree, Randy, when you're looking at the Cubs, as if I had to bet my hard-earned money on a team that's going to be able to pull away, it would be on the Cubs, because the Cubs have a ton of talent. You look at the lineup that they roll out there. It's Schwarber, it's Bryant, it's Rizzo, it's Baez right off the top. Like, you believe that those guys are going to get it done. Their pitching staff is good. Certainly the rotation is there. Added Kimbrel to the back end of the bullpen. Like, at some point, you believe that team's going to hit its stride. That's the team that I'd be scared of.
And the other end of this equation is, of the three teams we have to worry about the most, well, the Cardinals being one of those three, but the Pirates being the other one, which of the teams do you think is more likely? And I know the Cubs have they've used a lot of their young talent to acquire what they want, so their depth is not as good as it used to be. But they still have enough they can deal. If I have to worry about these teams making a massive move or something significant to help them in one way or the other, I would put my money on the Cubs doing it before the other two.
See, and I'm not sure about that. I guess it just comes to how desperate the Cardinals actually are to make that move, because they acted in, I don't want to say desperation, they acted this offseason with a sense of urgency, going out and getting Paul Goldschmidt, like adding the superstar. There was an urgency to get the best lefty on the market in Andrew Miller. And John Mozeliak talked about the fact that our plan is playoffs this year. And he almost basically said playoffs or bust this year, is that they were going for it. So I would think that the Cardinals would be set up, first of all, prospect-wise, very well. And the Cubs have depleted their prospects a bit. The Brewers have depleted their prospects a lot, because they had to give away most of their big guys for Christian Yelich mm-hmm. to end up making that deal. I think the Cardinals are best set up in the division to make the push. Will they do it? I don't know. But I think that they're best set up to.
What I'm worried about is intent, because I think the Cubs are aware of their window and where it is. My feeling is they would be more aggressive than the other teams in the division to do something mm-hmm. big before the deadline.
You'd think so.
And just because of where they are, and they know where they are.
Well, and they already did the Kimbrel deal, so we know that they're interested in that. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Coming up, professional sports contracts have been multiplying like crazy in the last couple of decades, unless you play hockey, that is. That's next on 101 ESPN. Free agency in hockey and free agency in basketball, again, shows us the disparity between the National Hockey League and other leagues. In the first day of NHL free agency yesterday, there wasn't a player that eclipsed the $12.5 million AAV of Connor McDavid of the Oilers. Since 1999-2000 to 2019-2020, the NHL's highest salary has only gone up 20.19%. Jaromír Jágr made $10.4 million in 99-2000. McDavid will make $12.5 million this year. That is as opposed to the NBA, where in 99-2000, Shaquille O'Neal was the highest paid player at $17.1 million. Basketball has nearly tripled their highest salary, with Kevin Durant joining Russell Westbrook at $41 million a year. Albert Bell made $11.9 million a year as the highest paid major league player in 99-2000. Mike Trout now makes more than triple that at $35.5 million. Same thing with the NFL. Troy Aikman made $10.75 million as the highest paid NFL player in 99-2000. This year, it'll be Russell Wilson at $35 million. So you've gone from $10.75 to $35 million. One of these things is not like the others, as they used to say on Sesame Street, and it is the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and there's a ton of reasons. It's funny, I was looking, though, at Connor McDavid is $12.5 million, which, by the way, we all realize is a ton of money and understand that. But I was just looking at Major League Baseball salaries, and I believe these are up to date for this year at least. And $12.5 million currently in baseball would be the 95th highest paid player. Right now, there are two players tied right there in Ben Zobrist and Tyler Chatwood, both members of the Chicago Cubs, making $12.5 million. I don't think that either one of those guys are going to pop up in a conversation of best in the sport, even if you're hammered drunk. So it is kind of crazy how something like that can happen. By the way, Marcell Ozuna slides in just under that at 12.25.
Well, I think there's a pretty simple explanation for this. NHL just is not as valuable as the other leagues are. The other leagues make more money. NFL, we know, is just an absolute beast.
TV money
is a big part of that. TV money is huge when it comes to all of these. The NHL doesn't even have a top five TV contract. And then they've got the NBC and NBC Sports thing, so you're going to see some of those games over the weekend. But in terms of TV money, it just doesn't come close to what these other leagues do. And if you look at all of the teams' valuations from all over the world, and that includes NFL, MLB, NHL, NBA, EPL, the English Premier League, if you look at the most valuable franchises in the world, there's not a single NHL team in the top 50. And I don't even know. I mean, I just looked at a Forbes list a few moments ago, and they only went to 50. There was not a single NHL team among the list. I think it's really just this simple. There just isn't a lot of money in the NHL. I mean, relatively speaking, yes, well, you're going to make a good living if you play, but compared to the other sports, it just isn't there.
And the NBA and the NFL caps are pretty similar to the NHL. It's about 50% of league-generated revenue. Just to give you the percentages, because I worked these up by hand, the NHL, well, I had to press the buttons with my hands, did I not? The NHL increase in 20 years has been 20.19%. The NBA, it's gone up 140%.
Damn.
MLB, 195%. And the NFL, it's gone up 225% with Aikman at 10.75 and Russell Wilson at $35 million.
And the NHL is, 20.9%?
Yes, 20.19%. So NHL players are not making as much, but they're, as we said, they're still doing well. I'll be interested to see. Now, is the NHL in our time going to catch those other sports? Probably not. But I wonder how the NHL will go about trying to enhance their revenue. To me, the one thing that those three leagues have in common that the NHL does not is that they're all on ESPN. And I know that there's a lot of people that don't like ESPN TV, but one of the reasons that ESPN had to fire a lot of employees is because they
paid
for rights fees to leagues.
Well, I would just think at this point, if it's only when you see the NFL going up 225% and Major League Baseball 195% and then the NHL just 20%, I feel like kind of if it hasn't happened at this point at a crazy rate, it's not likely to happen. Not to say the sport isn't still growing, but I think for a lot of people, if you're not in on it, you're not really in on it. But maybe it goes back to the reason that you're talking about is when you're flipping through the channels on a random night, you don't just see it on. Because sometimes I get stuck on random stuff, and I realize Wimbledon is not random. to a lot of people. It's like an awesome event that you watch every year. It's random to me. But I found myself flipping through the channels yesterday morning. I'm like, oh, hell, Wimbledon's on.
There it is. If Wimbledon was on FS1 or NBC Sports Network, you'd never see it.
Probably not going to find it. I mean, if it were on Fox Sports Midwest, I'd find it.
But, yes, you would.
Yeah.
But that is the power still of ESPN. And I know that they've lost a lot of homes and a lot of cord cutters have left them over the course of the last few years, but they still dominate FS1 and NBC Sports Network. And from a percentage standpoint, they still they get that viewer that is just flipping through. You flip through ESPN, you don't flip through those other networks we're talking about.
So, but if you are, and we'll just use ESPN for this example, if you are ESPN, what makes you want to spend the money for those rights, though? Because it's got to work on both sides. And I just wonder, like right now, their model is working at the very least. I wonder what would make them even want to acquire that product.
Because they're confident. As a casual viewer, you would stop and watch a random game. And they don't believe NHL is going to do that for you. I mean, it's a niche sport for a lot of people. It is a very regional sport. We're into the Blues, obviously.
LGB.
Yeah.
And Tarasenko. Obviously.
Right. I mean, so, good for us, by the way, in the merchandising. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure,
crushed
I think we talked
it.
To, oh
at
my God.
At least by 50%.
Yeah. Right? Over the Blackhawks in 2010.
Yep. Broke a record from 8 years ago. Or 9 years ago. That's fantastic. So we're into it. But I think on a national level, on a casual level, the interest in it just isn't there. And I think there are a number of reasons for it. I think hockey, first of all, it's tough to play. It's expensive to play as a kid. We don't grow up in an area where there's ice everywhere. So you can't really just grow up playing hockey. It's not like that here. But
although
it's
the new Lindenwood Ice Arena.
Oh, it's wonderful, right?
Centene Center is
going to
be awesome.
You got to pay for ice time, you know, and it's difficult for a lot of people to do. The equipment is expensive. But anybody can play basketball. You just need a ball and a hoop.
Yeah.
And anybody can play soccer. You just need a ball.
But that partnership, though, does exist now because on ESPN Plus, during the hockey season, there is a hockey game on ESPN Plus, an NHL game, every single night of the week. And so on their newest platform, which is kicking butt, ESPN does have hockey, and young people consume games that way. They consume games on their phones and on their tablets, and young people are going to become fans of hockey because of the action of the sport.
To be fair, ESPN Plus airs everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, when you're college basketball, if you have a team that's like 300 out of, you know, however many Division I basketball teams there are, I think it's 300-something, your game is probably being broadcasted. I mean, it's on. You know, they don't pay a whole lot for they don't have a lot of overhead because they use local production crews mm-hmm. or whatever, so it's really cheap to put those games on. They'll hire local announcers. So pretty much any basketball game throughout the winter, you can find on. So, I mean, just about every sport is on TV on ESPN Plus.
Real quick, and this is probably a question I should ask you guys off air, but what the hell, we're here. ESPN Plus, I don't have that.
Oh.
I got a feeling. Is it something that you have to pay for monthly?
It's
$4.99 a month. It's like five bucks a month, yeah.
But if I have ESPN for my cable, that doesn't do anything.
No, correct. It's in addition.
I'll just watch what I got.
But there's some cool shows on it.
Are there?
Yeah. ESPN Plus, and they've got every single 30-30 ever 30 for 30
I
ever
do
made.
Like those.
Those are great.
Netflix
did you see what's on tonight?
Those, though, don't they? What?
The Kobayashi versus...
Yeah,
isn't that great?
Yeah, gross. Actually, I'm interested in that. That starts at 7 o'clock, so if we could probably get out of here a few minutes early.
That's not a bad idea. Or just set the DVR. But yeah, the big Kobayashi versus Joey Chestnut rivalry. It's a 30 for 30 tonight.
Do you take control of your DVR from like remotely?
Downstairs? I don't. I should, but I don't.
Yeah, I don't either, but I believe that we have that technology, do we not?
It does exist, yeah.
All right. I'm asking a lot of cable questions.
It's okay.
Like when I call the company, is it plugged in?
You probably should pop for that $5 a month because I bet some Dixie State games are on.
If you can confirm that Dixie State's going to be on there.
I know this. They've
on
got
ESPN 8, the Ocho.
FCS football is on every Saturday.
Are
well,
they?
I mean, during the, yeah, Redbirds are on every Saturday. I can find a game on ESPN Plus.
And I'm going to pay $5 for that.
Pay $5 for Dixie State. I'm gonna look into it for
Big
you.
Boy, right. You don't even realize that the $5 is gone. It just kind of disappears. Don't worry about it.
I got a few of those things.
me too. Coming up, the Cardinals are in Seattle for the start of a 3-game series with the Mariners. Our friend and former 101 ESPN teammate Bob Stelton hosts a show on 710 ESPN in Seattle and joins us next on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals continue interleague play with a series that starts at Seattle tonight, and we head up to the Pacific Northwest. And our friend, former 101 ESPN host and native of Seattle, now host at 710 ESPN in Seattle, Bob Stelton, kind enough to join us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Robert, it's always great to hear your voice. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to talk to you guys. And let me just, before we talk baseball, say congratulations on the Stanley Cup. I know that's an huge deal out there, and I was absolutely glued to the TV. That was awesome.
It's a pretty good run, and we were talking a little bit before, but there's some excitement in Seattle about the NHL team that's coming their way too, is there not?
Oh yeah, yeah. And listen, everybody out here loves to be in on the ground floor of anything. That's why the Sounders are a huge deal out here, while MLS in various cities, you can see the sparse attendance they're getting. 40,000, 35,000 a game out here. So they love to be in on the ground floor or something and watching what happened in the Stanley Cup and just, you know, people sort of experiencing it for the first time, you know, propping themselves up in front of a TV and seeing what Stanley Cup action is like and the intensity. People are chomping at the bit out here. They cannot wait for hockey.
I would think, especially when you see how the draft worked and how Vegas was able to build a winner right off the bat. I mean, it's not like it used to be when you're getting an expansion team right now.
Yeah, I sort of worry though that they set the bar so high. Everybody's going to expect, year one they're going to go to the Stanley Cup Finals, and that's how it goes. We'll see. That would be awesome, but I think they set a bit of an unrealistic expectation, but. The idea of them being, you know, terrible for, you know, the first few years and then becoming something, I think, is out the window. And the chance to compete right away is more realistic. But to that level, I just hope people aren't disappointed if they don't make it to the finals in year one.
Well, it's going to be awesome when it does happen for you guys. All right, I want to start with this with the Mariners because I'm already guilty of it a couple of times, and I guess it's probably going to happen a few more times today. How many times have you called the stadium Safeco this year?
You know what? I mean, as often as we're talking about it, I probably have done it a few times early in the season, but as much as we mention it now, I'm conditioned. It's ingrained. It's T-Mobile Park, and I've got it. I've got the pink everywhere. I've got the visual. It's embedded now.
All right, good.
So that would be easy for me. I've got T-Mobile service. I love it. It's great.
It's just... What are you trying to get an endorsement here? What's
going
on?
Is anybody, are they going to listen or anyway? So the American League West, I mean, we knew it was going to be a difficult division because of the Houston Astros, just by virtue of them being in that division, they are an impossible team. They've been really, really good for quite a few years now. And the Mariners just played a series against them. When you see the two teams play, Is it noticeable in just one series, the sort of gap that exists, or do you think the Mariners are a little bit closer than we might think, despite what the standings say?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say they're not that close, despite the way that they played, which, you know, you had two of the three games went to extra innings. They played them tough, but listen, the Mariners just don't have the consistency because they've got a lot of youth and they've got, you know, pieces of duct tape, you know, some veterans that are here for now that aren't part of the future. They've basically traded away anybody that had any impact on this roster that was making any kind of money for the most part. You'll probably see a couple more guys leave before the trade deadline, whether it's Mike Leake or D. Gordon. I know they'd love to make those moves, but they're in full rebuild here. And we've seen the gap when they played the elite teams. Again, this was a closer series. They were swept, but they played them tough. But you see over the period of time that this team's really just not that close to the true elite teams in this league.
Bob Stelton with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And, Bob, I look at the Mariners now, and they kind of look like the Padres of a few years ago. Hopefully, for your sake and Seattle's sake, their system will be like that. But they seem kind of like a rudderless ship. But I don't see a definitive plan. Is there one?
Well, you know, this is the first time they've come out and basically said, now, they didn't use the word rebuild. They wanted to dance around and go, well, it's a reimagination. It's a restructure. Like, come on, you're ripping it apart. It's a rebuild. Call it what it is. And so they, it's the first time they've kind of openly said, hey, it's going to be a little bumpy. We're going to bring in some youth. We're going to build up the farm system. We're going to build this thing to endure, not to be a 1 year. I mean, they won 89 games last year, and everybody felt like, well, man, if you throw a little more money at it, you're a couple games away. You're into the postseason. But they elected to go for something that they feel like they can sustain for a while. Problem is, it's probably going to be at least 3 years of pretty awful baseball. I mean, you guys brought up the Astros. Everybody forgets they had, you know, year after year of losing over 100 games, and they lose 97 games. I mean, they were just dreck for years, and now it's paid off. But the problem is going through that. And I think a fan base out here that is now 18 years away from the last time this team was in the postseason, the longest drought in North American sports, the patience is worn thin. People are cynical. People are numb. They're just like, whatever, it's the Mariners. They're never going to win. But it feels like they've got a plan in place. It's just tough. It's a tough sell when you've had such a long drought when it comes to the postseason. It's tough to sell people on, hey, we're going to be great in 3 years. We're going to be great in 4 years, 2 years, whatever you want to throw on it. People are tired of waiting.
So, I mean, that was kind of where I was going with this, because my impression of Mariners fans, I guess Seattle fans in general, is that they're just kind of laid back. Is that wrong? I mean, are they, can they be more intense about their team than I perceive them to be?
The Mariner team, it's going to take some work. You've seen with the Seahawks, they're maniacs. The 12s, they absolutely revel in their reputation for noise and just being maniacs. I brought up the Sounders. I mean, the fan base for that is just maniacal as well. So there's no shortage of intensity when it comes to Seattle fans when they've got a product to get behind. The problem is the Mariners haven't really given them that product to get behind. And as much as last year, you look at it again, 89 wins, they fell apart at the end of the season. They were on pace for 98 wins, and the wheels came off. So it didn't really feel like a great season, despite what had come previous to it. So the fan base for the Mariners is a little more cynical, a little more apathetic. And they're going to need to be shown something that says, all right, this team is in fact on its way. They do have the pieces in place. It's just a matter of these guys starting to mature and find their way. And to this point, you've got a couple of players you feel pretty decent about, but you know, the bullpen's a disaster. The rotation is being taped together right now. You know, people are, again, they're rightfully so. They're very cynical. 18 years is a long time to root for a team and not experience the postseason one single time in 18 years. It's brutal.
Do factor. It's got to happen at some point. Bob, when you look at the rebuild right now, and as you mentioned, I mean, this could be 2-3 years down the road. They end up getting where they want. Maybe it takes a little bit longer. Do you see Scott Servais as the guy that they hand the keys over to, or just give the keys to and say, all right, well, this is your team. This is what they were building for you. Or do you think he's here for this part of it?
You know, that's a great question, because we were talking about this before, and there are very few managers, if you go back through each team, whether it's, you know, the Astros or the Cubs or any of these teams that have committed to a rebuild, how often do you see the manager survive that? They go through it, and they're there on the other end when the team is good. It just doesn't seem to happen very often. I mean, you can't look at Scott Servais and say, well, the reason this team stinks right now is because of Servais. I mean, I don't know what manager you could throw into this position to expect any better. He doesn't have anything to work with in terms of pitching and consistency. So I don't blame him for where they're at, but there is some speculation that, listen, this team needs to show definitive improvement. And that's true for Jerry DePoto as well. He's made 8 million trades, 8 million moves since he's been here. And they've committed. They've got ownership to buy into this rebuild. So I think if they don't see some level of progress, I don't think nobody's expecting them to be in the postseason next year or even the year after that, I don't think. But if it doesn't improve dramatically from what it is now, which is a team that's, what, 14 games under 500, then, yeah, I think they both could be shown the door. As much as they just did sign an extension last year, I think they need to see the young guys improve. That's the key. It's not about Jay Bruce or Edwin Encarnacion or any of these guys. It's about guys like Shed Long and J.P. Crawford and the youth on this team that you're looking at and projecting as part of your future.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Are those the couple of guys specifically? When you talk about the nucleus and the future of this ball club, who specifically are you building around?
You know, it feels like the majority of the guys that they're looking at aren't even up with the big team right now, with the exception of J.P. Crawford, maybe Marco Gonzalez, who you guys are familiar with out there. Daniel Vogelback is a guy who's shown some promise. He's their only all-star, but he's a guy who's hitting 240 at this point. Domingo Santana is a younger guy, Omar Narvaez. You've got guys who potentially could be, but, you know, in terms of saying, yes, this guy will be there when it all turns around, you might have two or three guys, to be honest, that are currently on this roster. And that includes Mitch Haniger, a guy who they didn't really want to trade in the offseason, felt like he was part of their future, got off to a really slow start average-wise, was striking out a ton, and then suffered a pretty severe injury and hasn't been playing. He and Marco Gonzalez were looked at as close to untouchable as it got. And then as the year went on and the losses started piling up, we started hearing they'll take a phone call on anybody. They're not going to give them away, but they'll take a phone call on anybody, which leads you to believe everybody can go. There might be a handful of guys who, if they can continue to progress, could be a part of this. But I would say of the current roster, you've probably got about four players that are up with the big team right now that you could look at and say, yeah, I could see them here in 3-4 years.
Bob Stelton, you will be able to start your show tomorrow on 710 ESPN in Seattle by saying, hey, these Mariners can pitch because the Cardinals can't hit, and the Mariners are holding down tonight.
Come on, man.
Yeah, Randy, you know it's baseball, though. Anytime you go into a matchup and you look at the opposing pitcher and you see an ERA of 8, you're going, man, we're going to clock this guy. He shuts them down for 8 innings and holds them to 3 hits and no runs. It's just the nature of baseball. So as much as you say that, I get why you're saying it. I have to see it to believe it.
Randy and I were joking before the show, Bob, that I asked him, and it was kind of a serious question, but in a joking manner, just how poor the offense has been for the Cardinals. I go, why the hell would you use an opener against the Cardinals? Like, I want my guy to face him as many times as possible right now.
You know, what's funny is the opener seems to be a thing that's catching on around the league. And I get it when you don't have a 1-5 stud rotation, but it hasn't worked out well for the Mariners. I mean, they've had a couple of openers that have done the job, which is you want to get through that inning unscathed. But more often than not, they've set the headliner is what you'd call them, up with a 3-0 deficit. They come in with a hole, some of them have not even made it out of the first inning, and the headliner has to come in with the bases loaded and work out of a jam. So you've got stressful innings right out of the gate for your headliner. So in theory, I like the opener for certain pitchers, but man, you've got to have the arms in the bullpen to make that work, and the Mariners just don't have it.
I'm sure you saw it, and the baseball world saw it when it happened. Just a couple of weeks ago, Albert Pujols coming back through St. Louis and the warm welcome he received here in town, and I don't think that was any surprise. And it made me think of one of my favorite players of all time outside of the Cardinals, and Ichiro. I love Ichiro, and I just saw a piece from a couple of days ago that he's still the most popular athlete in Japan. And I know he was hugely popular in Seattle, too, when he came back. What was that like? And I know that you, again, are aware of the reception Albert got when he came back here. But when Ichiro did the same thing, what was that like at the time?
Yeah, you know, he was such a diminished version of what he was. And I think people were warm and receptive. I mean, obviously, he was one of the great players to ever play for this organization. When he left, fairly or unfairly, he was kind of tagged with being a bit of a selfish player that, you know, he was worried more about his average and his stats than he was about playing team ball and moving runners along, things like that. And how much truth there was to that, who knows? So he kind of left under a little bit of a dark cloud. He came back. I think, you know, people were excited. But he was, again, such a diminished version of what he was. It wasn't like, you know, he was coming back and becoming the conquering hero, if you will. So, and then he plays, you know, first couple games this season in Japan just to showcase his skills out there in front of his home crowd. And it was cool to see that. So he didn't get the reception that Albert did, but you also didn't have that many people in the stands out here either. So it was a little muted, I guess, but I think he's turned the corner in terms of perception with the fan base. Because, like I said, when he left, there was some people that, you know, had that feeling of, oh, he was never a team guy. He was all about himself, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, time heals all wounds. He went to the Yankees. He went to the Marlins. And he came back. And, you know, he's been embraced by the fan base out here. Problem was, he just wasn't very good.
Hey, Bob, for a final question, I want to switch gears to the Seahawks because as we talk about the Mariners trying to rebuild, the Seahawks appear to have done so on the fly. As they get ready for training camp later this month, what are the prospects?
Well, people are kind of waiting to see what happens. Now, last year, you had all of the analysts around the country and the experts say, oh, this is a 6-win team. This is a 4. You had people calling for 4 wins from this team, and I kept going, I don't understand what people are looking at or what they're not seeing. I thought they'd win double-digit games, and they did. I think this year it's kind of along the same lines. Now, I understand the apprehension. You trade away Frank Clark, who's your best pass rusher, and you don't really have anybody to replace him that you're aware of right now. They bring in Ziggy Ansah, who's probably not going to start the season, could be on the pup list to start the season with a shoulder injury. You're looking at a lot of youth. You're looking at a lot of young guys who you've seen little flashes from last year. You're not sure what you're going to get. Guys like Trey Flowers, in terms of a cornerback, was great last year, but you're not sure, can he repeat that? Who's going to be the guy that's going to pick up the slack for Frank Clark? Doug Baldwin is called it a career, so now you've got one receiver that you know what you're going to get in Tyler Lockett. But as far as the offense and defense, you've got questions. But, man, there's still a ton of talent on this team. And I'm still, in my opinion, barring injury, and that's always the caveat, I think it's a double-digit win team again.
Bob, always good to have you with us. Thanks so much for the time, and enjoy the Cardinals being in town against the Mariners.
Looking forward to it, guys, and good to talk to you.
The Cardinals have a late start in Seattle. BT, how late is that start tonight?
Well, it's going to be an 8:30 pregame show. I'll tell you that much for sure. 9:10 start, I believe it is.
And the Cardinals will pitch Jack Flaherty against Matt Caricedi, who will be their opener in that 9:10 start at what is now called T-Mobile Park.
Yeah, I'm going to screw that up for sure because it's Safeco to me. Mm-hmm. There are a few places that are what they are. It's still the Bob to me in Arizona. I got to be honest with you. I really don't know what it is.
It's Chase.
It's Chase Field.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the Bob.
Because Bank One used
ballpark
to be.
Got bought out by
Chase.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
It's Bob, though. Still the Bob. Where else? The White Sox. What is the White Sox new place? Is it Guaranteed Rate Field?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? That's horrible. That is awful.
The cell was good.
Yeah.
People hated U.S. Cellular Field at
Did
first.
They?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, I mean, it's a lot of words. You know, it's a lot of syllables.
But once you eased them in pretty
rate.
Well,
yeah.
So now Guaranteed Rate is nothing.
Guys, we got a new name. It's even worse. You ready?
Check this out. You'll love it. The Cardinals, quite obviously, need to maintain something special. Ron, you weren't with us yesterday, but we did spend, I'd say, at least half the show celebrating the fact that the Cardinals are undefeated in the second half of this season.
Damn, so, nice.
Yeah, so far so good, but they got to maintain, got to keep it going, got to look for Jack Flaherty to have a nice bounce back start. His last one out was not a good one. I think he gave up a career high 7 runs in his 4 2/3, not great, and likely to be an emotional night for him while he was good friends with Tyler Skaggs, who passed away yesterday, you know, member of the Angels, so I'm sure it'll be an emotional night for him.
And you're going up against a team that's not very good. So
they can hit some homers, though.
They
and he's
can
been giving
hit
up
for
some
power.
Homers.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, ideally, you would go into this series thinking, all right, boys, let's eat. But you got to be very careful here.
Rest of the Central plays each other tonight. The Cubs are at Pittsburgh, and Milwaukee is at Cincinnati. If you're DVRing the Women's World Cup game, it's final now, and we're going to give you the score. So turn your radio down, and then we'll tell you when to turn it back up. Turn your radio down now. The U.S. gets goals from Kristen Press and Alex Morgan, and they beat England by a score of 2-1 to move into the finals. Okay, you can turn your radio up.
I can't believe it. I can't believe they lost. Like, that bothers me a
it's
tiny
amazing
bit.
It's amazing when
somebody
you think about,
lost.
Think about the fact that they lost.
Yeah. Yeah, they lost.
One of these teams.
I can't, but it was a nail-biter. Thought something was going to change in magic time.
Is Rapinoe going to be able to play the next game? Or
we don't know. She did not play in today's game. Oh, I guess we just gave
I probably
the
just gave it away. Sorry.
Idiots. You guys suck at this.
Oh, quit DVR and sports in the afternoon.
If there is a next game.
Oops.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Waiting for the
don't you think
on
that
the text line.
That most people who really, I know people have jobs, right? But most people who really, really, really care about this game
don't have
made
jobs.
Arrangements to watch it.
Did
or
a watch
they're
party
keeping...
at Ballpark Village.
Today?
Yeah. Pretty cool.
I'm sure like Amsterdam Tavern was packed today for this.
Today is the first day that baseball teams can sign international free agents. The Cardinals signed several Venezuelan youngsters, and we won't give you their names because we haven't heard of them in the past. But they have signed some. The Yankees signed the main guy, though, a 16-year-old center fielder named Jason Dominguez, whose agent calls him a classic 5-tool player. His bonus was $5.1 million, dang. And his comp at the major league level is a guy named Mickey Mantle.
I'm sorry, who?
Mickey Mantle.
Who used that comp? His agent or evaluators?
His agent, trainer Ivan Noboa, who's had him since he was 13.
Now, is it Mickey?
Did he do that knowing it was going to be the Yankees?
Probably.
He's like a guy you might know, Mickey Mantle.
Is it Mickey Mantle the ball player or Mickey Mantle the nightlife guy? Is he, which is his comp?
If he could do both, that's great. I would rather comp him with the baseball guy, though.
His nicknames are El Marciano or the Martian, because the people that trained him said there was no way he was from this world.
Uh-oh.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
The Martian.
That's a really cool nickname.
Yeah, El Marciano.
I want to see that guy in the big leagues. And with a $5.1 million signing bonus, you believe that will probably happen at some point.
And the Yankees only had $5.4 to spend.
Hey,
they believe in him.
Acquire a target. If you see a guy you want. By the way, I also really like the fact that international free agents are starting to make the type of money that they probably should, instead of, here's a couple grand, come on over and best of luck. Like, no, you're getting some of the most elite talent out there. You got to pay for this talent.
And we want to hear from you later in the show with your mic drop. Use the mic drop feature on the 101 ESPN app. The trade deadline is approaching at the end of the month, and the Cardinals are showing little to no signs of life. So who in your mind is untouchable for the Cardinals as they traverse the month of July and head towards the trade deadline? Are there any untouchable players in the Cardinal organization? Use the mic drop feature on the 101 ESPN app and tell us whether or not you have any untouchables, and if you do, who they are.
Yeah, don't tell us about your untouchables. Just tell us about the players that you believe to be untouchable.
I got to tell you, I have no untouchables.
Touch anything.
Whatever
it's
you
fine.
Want.
All right, good. That's a good way to look at it.
All I need.
For the right deal.
Ask my name first.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's fair.
Yep.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. Next up, Jason is back for day 2 in the 4 o'clock fight. That's coming your way here on 101 ESPN.